Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
Another spectacular day. Look at this, gentlemen. Brittany is free. The weekend is here, and the three amigos are together again.
Oh, there's Frank. He finally came on the screen. There we go.
Something wrong with this camera.
Well, gee, maybe.
Good morning, Stephen.
Maybe, Frank, if you started this a little bit earlier.
Oh, geez. I was out buying myself breakfast again.
Oh, here we go. Start already.
Morning, gentlemen.
What a week.
A good week?
Yeah, another busy week. I mean, I know that Paul keeps saying that the listings are down, but for us, our phones haven't stopped ringing. Again, I think the thing that's triggering that right now is the fact that interest rates are on the rise. We've seen them go up. We've seen the bond markets go up almost 0.75 points in the last 6 weeks alone. So obviously the banks, you know, got to make their share of that. And they've raised their fixed rates. And boy, I mean, it's a little bit of a culture shock how quickly they went up. No question. I don't think a lot of us saw that coming. But, you know, now you're looking in the twos. I mean, even a high ratio insured mortgage just 6 weeks ago, we're talking about 1.79, 1.89. Just like that, it's 2.39. Boom, just like that. So that's still a great rate.
That's the cheapest you can get now, Frank?
That's pretty well the cheapest. I mean, it's pushing people to variable a lot more now because obviously the spread is that much greater now. You know, you're looking at a variable in the 1.3, 1.35% range for a standard normal variable rate mortgage where – you know, on a fixed, you're looking at 2.39 if you're a high ratio purchase. If you're not, you're in the 2.69, 2.79% range. So there's quite the gap now.
That's a huge difference now.
Yeah. But again, most people are scared of prime going up that quickly as well. And, you know, historically, it doesn't happen that way. Prime takes a more methodical way of you know, going up. It doesn't, you know, we've seen 0.5% drops. We've never seen 0.5% increases in prime. Prime rate generally goes up 0.25 percentage point. Again, the Bank of Canada meets on a certain number of occasions every year. It's only 8 to 10 occasions per year. So they only make those announcements during those occasions and they prepare for it. The market usually reads ahead of time when it's going to happen. So you'll start to see the market, the bond markets go up, react to the fact that Bank of Canada rate is going to jump. But again, it's still not expected until the second quarter of next year if it's going to increase.
Yeah, but inflation is through the roof in the States. Is that not going to make any kind of an impact?
Well, inflation is through the roof everywhere right now, but a lot of it is a supply and demand issue, similar to what we went through with our housing. We're seeing that there's not a lot of supply out there and lots of demand for many materials and everything. Hey, we've all seen our grocery bills go up. We don't even have to talk about stopping at the gas pumps these days because it's absolutely outrageous what we're paying for gas. But everything across the board, name me one thing that's gone down in price apart from sense tickets because, you know, they're having a hard time drawing people right now. But you know, everything has gone up so far this year. And I think people are starting to feel it. It's good that they're working from home because at least that savings that they're getting from working from home is able to offset some of that. But if we ever get back to a normal society where people have to go to work and they've got to spend money on gas, parking, lunches, clothes, all of a sudden you're going to really feel the impact at that point.
So what's your advice? Hang in? Stick with your variable if you've got it?
Well, if you're in a variable now, you're giving up a percentage point to go to a fix. So again, it all depends on your appetite. If it's going to keep you up every night moving forward, lock in now. Listen, you're not going to kick yourself for locking in for a 5 year at 2.5, 2.75%. That historically, that's still a tremendous rate. So, you know, think about it for the next 5 years. You don't even, you know, and we feel like the last 20 months have been an eternity since this pandemic started. Well, this is 60 months that you're locking in for. So you've got that rate for the next 5 years, lock it in and feel safe. But again, the one thing that I'm fairly certain of, and I think Paul will vouch for the fact that we don't expect home prices to come down like some people sometimes predict. We do expect home prices to continually go up, maybe more gradually, obviously, than we've seen over the last 12 and 18 months. But I still think that we'll get back to normal where we'll see an annual 3 to 5% increase in home prices. Right, Paul?
I don't know about 3 to 5%. I've sort of tempered my expectations on 2022 now. I would have thought in the past maybe 3 to 5%, but we have a huge supply issue right now. There's nothing on the market. I mean, there's only 1,500 homes on the market right now, which is really, really low. I know we're always low at this time of year, but 1,500 is not a lot of homes on the market. And, as we're seeing right now, the new listings are dropping by week. The sold properties are even dropping by week, but the average sale price is consistently steady. So I think we're probably going to see a little bit less of a 3 to 5 in 2022. I think we might see maybe a 2 to 3% increase. I still think we're going to see an increase. I know there's a lot of people thinking we're going to decrease. I don't think we're going to decrease. I think we're going to increase, but just modestly. Where we might get into a little bit of trouble is if the listings start pouring on the market, which I don't see that happening. I mean, we have no supply. No one's moving. It's almost like our market just went stagnant overnight, and it's just a flat market right now. We sold a house. Got a text from one of my agents today. We sold one for $50,000 over asking. So it's still happening, but it's just not as prominent as it was before. We're just seeing a more stagnant market right now.
Do you see listings staying this low well into 2022 now, Paul?
We've been in a bit of a listing crunch for probably, it's dropped ever since probably 2016, 2017. Our number of listings have gone downhill, and it's mainly because, one, we have a supply issue because of the red tape on builders. We have to take some of the red tape off builders. We need supply. And right now there's just no supply. No one can move. And it's tough. A builder, before they put a shovel in the ground, has to go through so much red tape. And we need to remove that red tape so we can start getting some supply on the market. Will we see listings probably going down again next year? I think so. I think we'll probably drop for the fifth or sixth year in a row. Our number of listings will go down. And it's mainly, there's just no supply out there. That's the problem.
And rentals are still through the roof.
Oh my God. Rentals are crazy right now. Listen to this. There's 833 rentals on the market right now in the areas that we trade in, 601 to 9404, there's 833%. More than half of the listings on the market are actually rentals. 55% of the listings are rentals. And when I look at the main areas like the Orleans, the Barhaven, the Kanata, where a majority of the sales happen, there's 36 more rentals on the market than there are homes for sale. It's like there's only 203 homes for sale in Orleans, Barhaven, and Kanata, and there's 239 rentals. And when you look at Barhaven, there's 90 rentals compared to 52 homes for sale. So the rentals are through the roof right now, and it's hard to guess why. My thought is that people were seeing that the prices were going through the roof, and so they jumped in and bought investment properties knowing that they were going to go up, and now they're all trying to rent them at the same time. It's just not happening. And I would think, I mean, of those 833 rentals, I bet you, I don't know, I'm guessing now maybe 10 to 15% of those are foreign buyers.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's a guess. I don't know. I don't have that number, but we're seeing a lot of people who've been buying, especially Toronto buyers. We're seeing tons of Toronto buyers who are picking up investment properties because they were seeing the prices starting to skyrocket. And to them, it's cheap money compared to, you know, buying a rental property in Toronto. And it's a great city to live in, right? So I think a lot of Toronto buyers snapped up a lot of rentals as they saw the market going insane.
Yeah, so this would be investors that probably bought before prices went crazy, and now they can make some money on rent, right?
Yeah, they can, but I think a lot of them were buying in the start of 2021 when the market, like they saw January go crazy, February go crazy, and we didn't think we were going to come out of this. So people were buying in February and March and April. So people were buying as they saw the market going up, not thinking it was eventually going to start to plateau a little bit. I would think that a majority of the people who have bought are still a little bit underwater on their rental. Their mortgage is probably going to be more than what the rent or what they're renting it out at. So, I still, like I said in the past, if it doesn't cash flow positive, it's not a good investment. Different story now because of the way the market's gone and the increase in the average sale price and the equity. So, I mean, even if you're underwater $200-$300, it's still a great investment.
Are they getting their ask for rents these days, though, with so many available?
Yes and no. We're seeing some people having to drop prices a little bit, but not drastically. But let's be honest, the rental market was out of control too, right? I mean, it went from in suburbia, an average townhouse of 1500 to 1700 to 1900 to 2200. Some even the bigger ones are even more. it went up overnight. Like, it didn't just, you know, go up over 10 years. It went up over, you know, 10 months.
Yeah.
So we're actually seeing that the rental prices are still very, very high. So if you had to drop it down 50 to 100 bucks, are you losing? Not really. You're still way ahead of where you could be.
Yeah, but your chance of being cash flow positive right now, pretty much nil, right?
Pretty much nil. Unless you're buying multiple doors under one roof, a duplex, a triplex, a fourplex, you're usually cash flow positive if you're buying those. But if you're buying a single unit, it's very, very hard to be cash flow positive.
Or a very large down payment, right? Offsets that. But.
Yeah.
But who's got that money these days?
Well, a lot of people have it at the equity in their homes, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there with more equity than they've ever had before. And if their appetite is to get into investment properties, now's probably the time to do it.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
All this talk about Christmas makes me want to get out and start shopping, doesn't it, guys?
No, it doesn't at all. The worst part of Christmas is shopping.
How much shopping do either of you guys do for Christmas?
Shopping. What are you talking about?
Hey, Frank, we're talking about variable. How long would it take if you stayed in variable right now, and let's say prime went up in early spring, how far ahead would you be with these next 4-6 months staying variable?
Well, 1 percentage point, if you're, you know, if you've got a good rate, you're 1 percentage point ahead if you lock into a fix. So, you know, a 1/4 point increase in early spring, you're still 3/4 ahead. And then the question is, when's the next increase? And if the next increase is, like they say, late summer, then that's another 3 or 4 months where you're likely 3/4 point ahead, and then you get to 0.5 point ahead. You're still 0.5 point ahead. You know, if prime doesn't go up tremendously, then you're better off to stay in a variable. I wish I had that crystal ball that told me whether prime would go up 1/4 point next year, 0.5 point, or 3/4 point, but I don't know that. You know, there's lots of factors that come into play that's going to decide that. I think inflation needs to temper itself. If it doesn't, then it's possible that we could see prime go up by 0.5 point or 0.75 percentage point next year for sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's also going to plateau at some point. Mortgages, most Canadians have the highest mortgage they've ever had because of what's happened over the last 12 to 18 months. Anybody, or at least the ones that have purchased in the last 12 to 18 months, have a mortgage amount higher than they ever anticipated. The ones that have had mortgages and saw them pay it down, they've built up a lot of equity. So for those individuals, I think higher rates won't bother them as much because they've got a whole bunch of built-in equity that they are surprised that they have, and it happened as quick as it did. For those that purchased over the last 18 months, for them, there's a concern. Now, that being said, if they're in a variable, there's a little bit of a concern of rates going up. If they're in a fixed, they've got another 3.5 years before their mortgage comes up for renewal. So this, you know, these rate increases won't impact them too much now. It's the question is where rates going to be 3.5 years from now. So it's going to impact some, but I don't think it's going to cripple the economy. I don't think it's going to crumble, but it is going to hurt some people, the people that bought homes in the last 18 months that were really tight. And possibly for them, it could impact them more.
What's the highest prime's been in the last, say, 5-10 years?
So now we're into the probably 3.95%, if I'm not mistaken, is the highest the prime has been. So if you got 1% off, you're at 2.95, not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's still below 3% for variables. So
Frank, scenario, I'm in a variable mortgage at 1.45%. No chance you'd lock in.
Well, personally, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Personally, I wouldn't. If I was worried about rates going up and I wanted to kind of set my payments up, I would set payments up higher now so that you're taking advantage of the lower rate. Then as prime starts to go up, then it doesn't impact your payments because you've already prearranged for the payments to be higher based on, you know, if you think prime's going to go up by 1 percentage point, then set your payments as if your rate is 2.45 so that.
And everything, but then every cent goes to principal. You're way ahead of the game.
Of that extra, and then as prime goes up, a little bit less of that, but you're still way ahead because you're bringing your mortgage balance down.
So if prime went up 1%, which would probably take a couple of years before it goes up 1%, Potentially,
yeah.
Well, your best 5-year fixed right now is only 1% above that 1.45. Well, a little bit lower than that, but so I mean, it's your lot, and it's a small mortgage too. It's like a $200,000 mortgage, let's say. It's not a
The smaller the mortgage, the less the impact, and the smaller the mortgage, the more I would say stick with the variable because it's not going to impact you that much. But for those that purchased the house, you know, again, 6 months ago, and have a $600,000 mortgage on a townhouse. Yeah, it's nice to have that variable rate, but you need to do your math. And if prime were to go up 1.5%, you know, what does that do to you? And if it impacts you greatly, then you might be better off to lock in sooner rather than later.
Paul, have you noticed more investors knocking on your door, seeing that people have got so much equity over the last 2 years?
We are. Yeah. There's a lot of people buying investment properties. Even as the market has gone insane, people are still looking to buy investment properties because they got lots of equity in their home, right? And of course, with 833 rentals on the market, there's lots of choice out there. You know, there's tons of choice. And if the market's going to flatten out a little bit, go a little bit stagnant, if some listings start to hit the market again, there's going to be more opportunity for investors there as well. And a lot of better opportunity for investors to pick up properties for sure. But yeah, no, we're a good, maybe 10% of our portfolio is investors, about that, probably, but that might be a little high, maybe 8-10% of all the homes that we deal with, or all the homes we help buy and sell are investors.
Are you seeing clients come to you, Frank, now with more equity saying, should I invest?
Well, they're either investing in investment properties or finding other investments to put their equity to work, no question about it. You know, at the end of the day, it's not for everyone. There's still a group of people that are itching to pay off their mortgage entirely, and they don't want to put their equity to work. They just want a mortgage-free home, and that's all they, you know, that's what their goal is, and that's what they're aiming for. Right or wrong, and whether I agree with it or Paul agrees with it, I mean, you should always be putting, in our opinion, you should always be putting your equity to work for you, especially if you're getting borrowing at such a low rate. Why not? You know, if you can find an investment that's giving you a 3-5% higher return than what you're paying for it, why not put that money to work? You're just benefiting from it. But for some people, there's no comfort level in having a mortgage. They want to be mortgage free. They want to be debt free, especially as they're getting closer to retirement age. So
are we seeing less and less of that thinking, though, as time goes on? It used to be that was the goal. Automatically, that was the goal. You buy a house,
We're seeing less and less because of, you know, my age group, Paul's age group, where we think a little bit differently. We want to put our equity to work. We want to put our money to work. Yes, Paul, even your age group.
You just put me in your age group, Frank?
No. I didn't say mine and yours together. Well, I said my age group and your age group.
And here I'm upset he didn't put me in.
Well, you're closer to me than you are Paul, Steve. I mean, you're still further away than me. But honestly, I mean... You know, I think we think a little bit differently. Why not put that money to work, especially if we can borrow it at such a low rate? Where our ancestors, I think your parents probably think the way most think that way, right, Paul? I mean, let's get debt free. Let's be mortgage free because that's more important to them.
Yeah. So the older generation, absolutely. They're all about paying off their mortgage, being debt free. That's their goal. My age group and a little bit younger, their whole goal is to buy investment properties and never be mortgage free. But what we're finding now is the millennials are more like the older generation. Millennials don't want things. Millennials, they're happy if they have a house, even if they're renting some of them. They're happy just with minimal things and not with lots of things. And so they're
experiences.
They're in for experiences. I mean, you ask a millennial what's the most important thing in their job, and it's never money. It's all about flexibility. I mean, that's what they want. They don't want things.
They want both. Don't kid yourself. They want both. They want the money, but they want the flexibility that comes with the money.
And they don't want to work very hard for it either.
Some yes, some no. I mean, I that's in every generation. I still believe that this younger generation doesn't get it properly. You know, it's not fair to them because a lot of people talk about them not wanting to work hard. There is a lot of people in younger generation that want to work hard. And they want to be compensated for it. Where they get upset is where they see similar people in their age group that aren't working as hard and making as much money as them. So that's where they get upset.
But it's shocking. It's not shocking. It's because the way they want things. But the millennials are not really into investment properties. We don't get very many millennials who are looking to buy investment properties just because they're minimalist. They don't want a lot of things. You're right. They want experiences. They want to be able to travel. They want to be able to do things like that. And they don't really care for things. And now I'm painting it with a broad stroke. Obviously, yeah. There's lots of millennials that are absolutely into building wealth through real estate. But I just find the generation is more into experiences and less about things, which is not a bad thing.
Two different things though, right? Mortgage-free and debt-free.
Yeah. You know what? I'll say to clients, listen, if you're buying an investment property, putting your money to work, you know, if your house is paid for and you took out a $300,000 line of credit at 2.95% and somebody told you there's an investment opportunity where you can get a return of 7 or 8%,
yeah,
you're up 5%. Technically, I say to the client, you're still debt-free. Yeah. You're still mortgage-free just because you have it, because you have an asset on the other side that's backing it up. So there's nothing wrong with that. But again, I mean, for some people, it's just, it doesn't work that way. Their brain doesn't function that way. Their belief system is different. They don't want any debt on their house, period.
But you got to look at the portfolio, right? As opposed to just that one piece of paper that says you have a mortgage. You look at your entire portfolio, you're way ahead of the game.
Of course. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I love when someone says, yeah, I own my house free and clear. All I hear is, oh, you have a bank account full of money. Really, when you own your house free. That's what it is. You own your house free and clear. You have a bank account full of money looking to put that money to work.
Yeah, your advice would be to sit on that money, right, Paul?
Yeah. I don't believe in stagnant money. I believe in putting money to work. Absolutely.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. To the phones we go and say hello to Rick. Hello, Rick.
Hi.
Hi. We're waiting with bated breath.
Okay. My wife and I have owned two homes. Well, one's a year-round cottage, the other one's a home. One's in Ottawa, the cottage is in the valley. They're worth about $1 million. Together. We own them free and clear, no mortgages. We have very little debt, probably $5,000 between us on credit cards. And we're thinking of buying a condo in Toronto, downtown Toronto. So my first question is, with that kind of equity, what's the best way of us going about buying a condo?
Well, I would say, you know, as far as borrowing is concerned, even your accountant would probably tell you. Now, it all depends. I mean, some people say, Frank, we got money in the bank. I want to put it as a down payment. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. My advice would be you're probably better off to borrow. You know, if you have a home equity line of credit on one of your properties that you own right now, I would borrow the down payment from there and then get a full mortgage on the condo itself because you get to write off the interest. And again, it all depends on where you're at as far as your taxable income is concerned. But if you know, you can lower your tax range a little bit by having a loss on this condo because you're likely going to have a loss. So I don't know if the purpose for buying it is maybe the plan is to move there at some point in the future, or if you're looking at cash flow on it. But you know, condos in Toronto are even more expensive than here in Ottawa. So I don't think the rents are significantly more than they are here. So
are you just moving to Toronto, Rick?
No, if we were to do this, it's to our, we have a son in university and he'll be moving out of residence at the end of this year. So our thought is buy a condo. He can live there and we can rent one of the rooms out to a roommate. And then, you know, he either buys it back from us or we just hang on to it as an investment. But he'll probably be there living there for the first 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. What I would recommend in that scenario is your son's going to school, but maybe you buy it with his name on it, make that his first home. You can get the land transfer tax rebate. He's going to be living in it. You guys co-sign with him because the likelihood is that he doesn't qualify for a mortgage on his own because he's probably going to school. But at least he can own the property. And then if he rents it out to a student, I mean, he can just, you know, then at that point he's got some rental income. But because his income is probably not very much, it won't impact him as much as far as paying taxes on that rental income. So
Rick's probably thinking, why would I buy my kid a home?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, residence is quite expensive. So here's another question. With the equity that we have, we're talking about getting a mortgage, I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
Well, getting a home equity line of credit, maybe, or I don't know. Were you planning on maybe taking money out of your? You have money in the bank account to be able to put the down payment down?
Not very much. No. So yes. I'm thinking a mortgage. The rate for a mortgage would be better than it would be in a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan.
No question. I mean, if the purpose is for you to keep it 3, 4, 5 years, then yes, for sure. The what I would do is I would probably do a mortgage, whether you do a fixed or variable rate mortgage. The rate will be better than it would be on a home equity line of credit, for sure.
But do the mortgage on the condo, right, Frank?
No, but even on the house, you know, if he's taking out the down payment, and I don't know, what's the condo going to cost? $500-$600?
I haven't even found one yet, so let's assume yes.
Let's say $600,000. That means that's $120,000 down payment if you want to put the 20% down. Therefore, I mean, you know, you're taking out 120 out of your existing home here, a mortgage out of, and I would do a mortgage for the 120 and then a mortgage for the 480 on the condo in Toronto.
Okay. And are we better off going to a mortgage broker or a bank? Which one is more?
This could be Frank's toughest question of the day.
Yeah. Well, I worked at a bank for 21 years, and I've been a mortgage broker for 16 years. I can tell you firsthand, and not because I'm a mortgage broker now, but generally you get a much better all-around mortgage with a mortgage broker than you do with a bank.
Well, Frank, the other thing Rick needs to know is that you can do mortgages in Toronto.
Yeah, for sure. Across the country, actually, more or less. I mean, I've got licensed people across the country that can do mortgages, so...
Okay, last question, because I'm going to start losing you in the signal here. I'm going through the valley. So given the equity that we have in our two properties, and we're debt-free virtually, what I'm confused about is when I'm young, I haven't got any equity at all. I go to the bank, I get a mortgage, and they do their due diligence and give me a mortgage, and I make my mortgage payment. If I've got this kind of equity, does it translate to the same kind of scenario where I have to make a monthly payment and the bank or broker's lending me the money even though I've got the cash already?
What do you mean you've got the cash? You've got the equity in your home, but the equity in your home is yours. But if you borrow against the equity in the home, then you've got a monthly payment, just like having a normal mortgage.
Okay, so how can I make use of the equity in my home and turn it into cash so I wouldn't have to get a mortgage? By selling something?
You'd have to sell both properties, right?
I mean, the only way you get that equity cash in your bank account is by selling. If you hang on to it, then you got to borrow against it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks, guys.
Give me a call on Monday, Rick, and we can discuss it in more detail if you want.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay. But can you give me your number over the phone?
Yeah, or go to mortgagebrokersottawa.com.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be able to find me.
Mortgage Brokers Ottawa. Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
Okay, bye.
Now, can we follow up on this other question, Frank, because I'm having a difficulty. Really?
With the broker versus bank?
Yeah, which is really better? Actually, hey. I mean, it's pretty obvious, though, right? Because you do get more options with a broker.
You get different options. Go ahead, Paul.
I just found it funny. He's asking Frank where he should go. How about right here? I'll help you.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be almost like a mortgage broker recommending a different realtor.
I know. Yeah. That's crazy.
Touche. Touche, Steve.
I was letting that go, Steve.
You know what? I mean, listen, I mean, we still do mortgages with banks sometimes. So sometimes the fit is with a bank, but at least we have that option to put customers either in a bank or with a non-bank lender. And the non-bank lenders, many of them are actually funded by the big banks, but their product, their prepayment privileges, their penalties to get out should you have to break it early are significantly better than they are at the major banks. So
yeah, when I'm talking about going to a bank, I'm talking about going directly to a bank. I'm not talking about getting a mortgage with a bank through a mortgage broker because many
mortgage brokers will do it through the bank because there's, you know, it doesn't fit the non-bank lenders. The one thing about the non-bank lenders, they're very in the box type of lenders because they're getting the money from the big banks. The big banks want to make sure that the portfolio that they're lending on is extremely safe and not a lot of risk there. So You know, so for us, I mean, sometimes we have to do mortgages through, and the two banks, the major banks that we work with are TD and Scotiabank. So we do a lot of business with TD and Scotiabank because, you know, just that client happens to fit in that box. And, you know, a lot of times I'll try to do variable rate mortgages with the banks. But, you know, over the last year, year and a half, when your rates are 1.89 and 1.69, then doing a mortgage with the bank isn't so bad. As long as, and again, the key is, as long as you're not going to break it early to pay the penalty, because the penalty is going to be painful. So
yeah, and the client has final say anyway, right?
Absolutely, no question. I mean, we'll make recommendations, but at the end of the day, the client might say, you know what, I like the two, but I think I like the bank a little bit more. And if it's okay with you, I'd rather go with the bank. And if that's what the client wants, then that's what the client wants. But at least they're going in it with their eyes open, as opposed to getting a shock 3 years from now when they go through a marital breakup or they lose their job and they got to pay the mortgage off and they get surprised with the penalty. At least hopefully they know a little bit ahead of time that the penalty will be painful should they have to break it sooner.
And Steve, obviously the advantage of going with the mortgage broker too is, one, you go to a bank, you're getting their only product. You go to the mortgage broker and they'll shop that product around to see when they get you the best situation and the best rates, right? So you can go to all sorts of different institutions where you walk into a certain bank, you're getting their rate and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me give you an example of what a banker said to one of my clients. Actually, it was one of my daughter's clients. My client got the client 0.5% less than what the bank was offering. Now, that client spoke to my daughter about 3 weeks ago, so the rates were less back then. So my client, the bank calls my client, and my client says, I'm good. You know what? I got my mortgage through a broker, and I got this rate. And the banker says, well, they definitely put you with a B lender, and be careful because it's going to be expensive to get out of it. And my daughter laughed, and she said, it's going to be expensive. You mean the penalty? Yeah, that's what they meant, the penalty. My daughter said, call them back and say what the penalty would be if they broke it with them 3 years down the road. Significantly more than it would have been with this lender. And by the way, that specific bank is the one that funds the lender that's doing that mortgage at half.
Oh, that lender without a posted rate, you mean?
You got it. That's exactly it. So.
But a lot of that is lack of education on the bank, right? The person's probably not trying to be a jerk. They probably just don't know.
I'm guilty. When I worked at the bank, I didn't know what honestly, I thought a mortgage broker is somebody you go to if you can't get qualified at a bank.
Yeah, that was like, old school honestly, thinking. That's what it used to be.
That's what it was, right? You only go see a broker if your bank won't give you a mortgage. And that now is the other way around. In some cases, I mean, we say to customers, go to the bank might do it for you.
Yeah.
Because they've got some quirkiness to their deal that the branch reps don't do mortgages as often as we do. They don't get scrutinized as much as we do. So that passes. And some examples are, you know, somebody that works for their dad's company. At our level, it gets caught right away and they're treated as if they're self-employed. At the bank level, they just overlook it. So.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. Paul, do you see the market changing at all over the next 3-4 weeks compared to the last 3-4 weeks? You think it's just going to be pretty much what we're status quo right now?
Yeah, I've mentioned before in the past that I was hoping for a blip in the fall market. I think that blip is not going to happen. I think we're gonna probably mimic where we've been over the last month, a month and a half, really. I think people right now, their focus is now shifting towards Christmas and decorating and things like that. And there, we have a lot of people, even though I tell them, get your house on the market now, we have a lot of people that are just deciding to wait until after Christmas. If you are someone who's looking to wait until just after Christmas, my recommendation would be don't wait for what they call the spring market, or what you guys think the spring market is, which would be, you know, March, April, May. I would get your house on the market earlier. There's going to be less people looking, but there's going to be way less competition. So if you're looking to list in the spring market, I would look at somewhere around January or not early February to get your house on the market, because I have a hope. I don't have a feeling, but I have a hope that we might get flooded with homes this spring. So I would try to beat that rush and get your home on the market and get off that market before that rush happens.
Yeah, and if you don't have pictures of your outdoor yet, now's still a good time to take some pictures of your outdoor. It might not be as beautiful as it was in the summer, but still, at least it gives somebody an idea of what your backyard looks like if you're going to sell it.
The grass is still green, believe it or not, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, the grass is still green if you have your furniture still out, which most people don't. But if you do have your furniture out, or you can make the mistake that I made and just go put your furniture back out and take your pictures. But no, there's a lot of creative things that we could do with our photographer. You know, like I mentioned before, when I sold my property, I had my pool closed. I had my in-ground spa closed. I had everything, just the furniture was away. So I put it all out. I got our photographer to virtually open my pool. So it looked like there's steam coming off the spa and it looked like the pool was blue water. So we can do some creative things with our photographer, even if your pool is closed and your backyard is, you know, bare of furniture.
I tell you what I would do though, Paul, is I would call you guys in now to take pictures of the interior before all the Christmas decorations and everything go up. Because come, you know, after Christmas and early January, you got to put all that stuff away. You got to clean up your house. Then you got to get a photographer in. If you want to be ready to go, be ready to go, right?
We've done it a few times already. Just recently, we did two last week where the people aren't listing till probably February. But we had our professional, we signed the listing, and then we had our professional photographer go out and take all the pictures. So we're ready to go once they're ready to hit the market in February. But you're right. There was no decorations. There was no clutter. There was, you know, none of that. And, you know, it's always nicer when you're taking pictures and you can see some green grass outside.
Yeah.
We're still going to take the exterior pictures with the snow in February, but it's always nice to see sort of the, you know, you can see the deck, you can see the interlock, you can see the grass, you can see the gardens, things like that. So we have done that a few times. And then what we call that is an exclusive listing. So we don't put it anywhere. We don't put a sign up. We don't even put it on our website. But what we will do is if, you know, we're working with a buyer and a buyer says, I'm desperate for a 4-bedroom, a 3-bathroom, a blah, 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 just like you have, we might say, hey, Bill and Mary, do you mind if we show someone your house? We might have a possibility of getting it sold before it even hits the market for you. So that's an option as well. But yeah, while the outside's still nice, I would get a hold of us to get our professional photographer through the door to get some exterior shots for sure.
Yeah, and then you would send them back with snow shots, right? So they don't look outdated.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd send them back for snow shots as well. So because yeah, the last thing you want is the grass pictures in February. And the worst part is I see it all the time. I'm looking through listings in mid-February and I see a pool open and grass, and I'm like, what are you doing? This is your biggest. What it does, it screams it's been on the market forever. And you know,
yeah,
we see that.
Or I have a lazy agent, because if you see snow in July, this person has not taken care of you.
Listen, so over the I think it was probably in 2016 is probably when we carried our most amount of listings. I think we were up to about 160 listings at that point. Can you imagine when the season changes and you have to take 160 new pictures, snow pictures, and that? It was always a nightmare when we had to do all that, because we, you know, we had our photographer going back to take all these different pictures. Sometimes if we were listing something way out in the country, we would see if just so we could get it quickly, we'd see if the seller could take some pictures of the outside so we could get them on quick. Because yeah, as the market changes, you have to change, your pictures have to change. Otherwise it shows a stale listing or a lazy agent. We don't want to look as lazy agent. That's for sure.
Yeah. You're being paid to market. So you better market properly.
You have to market it properly. You have to. And pictures tell the story. I mean, you can't get someone through your door if the pictures aren't striking. And the first picture you see is that curb appeal, right? You either see snow in it or you see grass.
Frank, how important is a rate guarantee these days?
It's important. Increasing rate environment, it's kind of nice to have it if you can get it. Again, if you're looking to buy a house in the spring, but closing in the spring, then a rate guarantee makes sense. If you're looking to, you know, if you're only going to start looking in March or April and then buy for May or June because you want to try and tag team it to when school's over, then a rate lock now doesn't do you a lot of good because you're not going to, you know, it's only good for 4 months. But anybody that's got a mortgage coming up for renewal that's really nervous about rates, I would say even if your mortgage doesn't renew until next September, nothing wrong maybe with getting a rate lock now. You get it for 4 months, and then at that point, you know, 3 months from now, we can analyze as to whether it's worthwhile to move forward based on what's happened over the last 3 months. And if rates have gone up a little bit more, then you may want to, you know, you may choose to pay the penalty early to get out early. And at that point, even with the major bank, if you've only got 4 or 5 months left on your mortgage, the rule of thumb is that the penalty is going to be the 3 months interest and not the interest rate differential. You pay that penalty, and then you've got this rate now locked in for the next 5 years.
Is a rate lock only on a fixed rate, or can it be on a variable?
Could be on a variable too, but what you get on the variable, obviously, is you get the discount off the prime. So that's what's fixed.
Yeah.
So you can take a variable, and if they're offering prime less 1.1 right now, you can get prime less 1.1 locked in for 4 months. And then obviously, you know, if prime goes up, then prime goes up, but your 1.1 still qualifies.
What do you think is going to happen with the discount over the next few months?
I think it's going to come down a little bit. Personally, I'm surprised. But again, I mean, you know, the profit margins are really high because the bank rate is so low right now. As the bank rate goes up, I can see some of the lenders maybe coming back down to prime less 3/4, prime less 0.8, instead of prime less 1 to prime less 1.2 right now.
And do you see rates going up in the next week?
I don't think so. The bond market doesn't tell us that. But all that has to happen is one report come out that tells us the inflation's high, or again, we created another 30,000 jobs and our unemployment number goes down. Reports like that just trigger the bond market. And at that point, we generally see banks raise the fixed rates.
What I liked about the banks, though, is, you know, when those rates come down, they come down just as quickly, right?
Well, of course they don't. But you know, we've gotten used to that. When the bond market comes down, the bank makes sure that it stays down for a couple of weeks before they start to lower their fixed rates, where when the bond markets go up, it generally happens within 24 to 48 hours that they're reacting to it.
You know, Steve, the show's almost over, so we might as well, you know, send Frank off with a bang. What do you think of the gas prices, Frank?
I'm going electric, so it's not going to bother me as much in a couple of weeks. So I'm going on an electric car.
Are you going to?
I am. Yep.
I guess you old guys do that, I guess.
Yeah.
Coming from, you know what? I know you guys are going to forget, so I'm going to wish myself a happy birthday. How's that, okay?
You weren't going to forget.
I know you weren't. But you know what, Paul? You remember when we started the show? We thought Steve was like almost 60 years old. Well, that's the age I'm going to turn this Tuesday. And that was 14 and a half years ago.
I was late 40s. Wow.
Okay. I didn't. But we thought you were almost 60 years old. And the white hair.
I was 33 when we first started doing this show. I was a baby.
Yeah.
But so we're almost done here. So Frankie, happy birthday on Tuesday. I hope you have a wonderful birthday.
Thank you. I got a few more. Diane, who's a huge loyal listener of Steve, loves Steve. My underwriting manager celebrating her birthday today. Paula White celebrating her birthday tomorrow. Leo Maiorino, another great listener to the show, celebrating his birthday. And my good friend Otto Bernardi turning the big 6-0 tomorrow. So happy birthday to Otto.
Wow.
1 year older than you.
He plays hockey three times a week, still.
Impressive.
Good for him. At 60 years old, very impressive.
Yeah, yeah. And I watch hockey three times a year, so.
A week.
Paul, you got anything?
I got nothing.
Paul at paulrushworth.com. Frank N. at mortgagebrokersottawa.com. I can't.
Have a great weekend. Hey, and please continue to support local businesses and charities, everyone.
When's the next job report, Frank? I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, God, I don't know, and I'm not looking
forward
to it. Send
him off with a bang, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, Frank.
Happy birthday. Have a great week.